I knew the critique in my final interview episode was, you only have two products, so for that reason, I'm not going to invest in you. I'm going to have a third product, and it's not going to take me a year.
That's cool.
I'm going to have it out by the day that I am fired. It will be on shelf.
Welcome to the second part of my chat with Pamela Laird. If you missed last week's episode and you're just tuning in now, go back and check out last week's episode, as it's actually part one of this interview with Pamela Laird. This week, we kick off with more behind the scenes stuff on The Apprentice and how a photo taken thousands of miles away actually nearly caused serious issues for Pamela's future in business. Here is the second part of my chat with Pamela Laird.
This viral photo emerged. Most of you have probably seen it. It's a seahorse holding a cotton bud. An underwater photographer took it. It went completely viral. And people were like, wait, what? Like, cotton buds end up in the ocean and don't biodegrade. And, you know, it was a bit of a shock to me. Like, I'd always been looking towards recyclable and biodegradable because I thought it was the future.
Yeah.
But I thought it was the far future. I didn't think it was tomorrow. So my genius liquid-filled cotton bud, it wrapped in single-use plastic, became like the worst idea ever could ever be created. Like, I was a monster for making this product. Yeah. Yesterday I was a genius.
You're
today I'm a monster.
You're out there killing seahorses.
Yeah, pretty much. Big net. Ruining the aquatic life. And yeah, it was just as we launched on shelf and Boots. We'd worked with like big influencers in the UK who did videos. Mm-hmm. And it was literally within that week that that photo came out. So like Cosmo UK had shared it, the video of my product being used, and all the comments were like, this is the biggest waste of plastic. Like, we got trolled, like completely trolled.
Isn't it amazing though? Completely butterfly effect.
100%.
Something happens thousands and thousands and thousands of miles away. A guy takes a photo under the sea, wherever it was, let's say the Maldives, and it ripples right across the ocean to Dublin,
to Dublin, to the UK, to every market that I was selling into.
Wow.
And it took me by complete surprise. It was right around the time I was considering walking away from the deal with my investor and distributor. And it just took us all, like, I knew that something had to change. I just didn't know how much time I had. And then the EU announced a ban. They announced a ban a couple of weeks later, very reactive.
Really?
Which was in effect from March this year, 2020.
Okay.
So my mind was like, okay, so I have until 2020. Mm. And then the other part of my mind was like, I don't have even another hour of this product. This is over. This is the beginning of the end. It may still trickle sales, but am I going to put any more money into content, any more money behind it, any more? What do I do? I had to.
How many products did you have this stage?
At this stage, I had two.
Okay.
The other one was a wet wipe, which in which the EU announced in the legislation in 2025 all had to be completely biodegradable.
Okay.
This was a tan erasing wipe that we had, and so both my products, one more scent into them was like so short term. Like, could I justify it? Mm. What was I going to do? And so I tried to wrap up my agreement. We both walked away amicably. I just said, look, you don't want to go where I want to go. You've now seen this trouble. You're happy to walk away. I'm happy to walk away.
Okay.
He didn't want to go forward with me, and it was feeling was mutual. So we parted ways. The shares were never issued in the end, which probably should have made me worry. I just thought we were so casually in this arrangement, but that is...
Yeah, sometimes in Ireland, you can kind of take that. I always say to people, especially people who message me about starting businesses with friends, I'm like, just get a quick letter.
Just
letter going, if this, then that, if this, then that, if this, then that. And then, cool.
Yeah.
Definitely going to business with friends, but just have...
Totally.
Very clear, if Pamela and Gary start a business, okay, if Pamela wants to leave after 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 2 years.
100%. And then it also gives the other person that you think you're very casually involved in more of a reason to help you when you need it.
Yeah.
So if you can both just walk away, there's no security for either of you. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, when it doesn't work, it's handy, but sometimes it's not. So yeah, that would be my advice too. I wouldn't ever do that again. But yeah, there I was with two products selling, but like knowing that I had to do something else. And I looked...
Were you getting weird... distributors and your stores, I should say, were they kind of going, ooh, Pamela, this is going to be a bit of an issue?
Not at that time. Like, I definitely had 6 months where it was okay. But at the same time, as a brand, I was really conscious of pushing either product because I knew what the social media reaction was on a mass scale. It wasn't as bad like on our own social media, but it was when we would do anything with big influencers.
Yeah. Well, they're generally a common target anyway.
Exactly. So the product was still selling through, but it was just... It was right at that moment I thought, we need new products. So I went back to the bank. I asked for a stocking loan. I said, like, I need to bring new products out. Mm. They gave me a stocking mail.
Okay.
I looked at one of our products we had coming down the line. I thought, this needs to be adapted. This needs to be three questions. Is it sustainable? How much can we get it for? Will it be reasonably priced? And will my mum let me use it on my skin? Because they're three questions I now ask myself every time.
That's good. I like that.
My mum's a facialist, so if she won't let me use it, then I won't be making it.
Great,
So
you need guidelines.
You do.
You need limitations.
You do.
We all want blank slates, but you actually need limitations.
You do. You need
to make yourself worse.
And a TR is a brand then too. So I thought, like, sustainability will be number one, and it just
absolutely
has to be. And so I brought out Barefaced, which was our third product to launch. Launched at the very, very end of 2018, which was a bit of a struggle because it was hard to get into stores. We didn't really get listed in many stores till early of last year.
Okay. Why was that?
Why?
Just the timing was
just timing by the time it landed. Gotcha. And good old me and my checking, they arrived with no barcode. I worked with a packaging designer, and like throughout my time of packaging design, I normally the barcode goes in kind of after approval of artwork.
Right.
And so you're looking at this flat screen of artwork.
You're probably looking at it 1,000 times a day.
And I rushed it. Like I didn't get a hard copy sample of the outer bag before I signed off on it. So here I am looking at it flat and I'm like, yeah, assuming the barcode will go in one of the edges, but every edge is a fold. It's a vac sealed bag.
Okay.
And so there was no barcode on any of the...
How many units?
I actually don't even remember. And I don't even want to think about it.
Just blank time in your mind. You're like, yo, just block it out.
Like my mum, my family, like, how did this happen to you again? I'm like, I actually can't even talk about it. Can we just label in silence, please?
Shut up and stick a label.
Just shh. You think you're going to learn. But I was so rushed. I needed it.
Yeah.
Like, I needed to save my brand. And the product was still selling on shelf, but I knew that I just had to block it on social media. I had to stop talking about Eyecatcher. I had to stop talking about the Tannerizer and move on. And so I launched this product, sustainable, biodegradable, in 6 months versus the other alternative on the market, which is a wet wipe, which takes 100 years.
Oh, wow.
So I knew we had a massive USP, good for your skin. Hard category though, because you've got wet wipes, which look like wet wipes, as we all know them. You've my new product, which just looks like cotton wool.
Okay.
So we were up against it in merchandising in stores, trying to get on the same shelf as the wet wipes because we looked like cotton wool.
Okay.
So we were cheap wet wipes, but we were expensive cotton wool. And so, yeah, that was tough. I learned a few lessons there in getting into the wrong category and not selling through. But we launched into Penneys. Penneys are so supportive and have been from day one for me. We launched a store there and did extremely well. That's our customer. She shops there.
You know who your customer is.
Exactly.
Okay.
So by February of last year, I knew I was getting on The Apprentice.
We had
two products on the market at this stage. Walked away from the first two. My distributor still had tail end stock. He was selling through himself, through stores.
Yeah, how does that work actually? Because you know, when a product dies off, how do you just let it kind of go peacefully into the night, or what way does it?
Well, it's really hard. Like, you kind of have to. I mean, he was still selling it through into pharmacies, and he did it via another brand he had. He did it with a free gift, so that's how he packaged it up. My product's quite reasonably priced, so in turn low cost, probably one of the lowest cost products he had on his warehouse.
Okay.
So an easy one to do gift with purchase kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
You talked like, you know, we did this part. Where are the ideas coming from still? Because that's the hardest point.
Yeah, it is. But I have so many ideas. Like, if I had all the money and all the time and a team, they'd all be out tomorrow. Like, it's just so difficult to get the product over the line with such high minimum order quantities. That's why it's so hard when you're doing things from scratch. Like, it's different if you're just changing a fragrance. Like, if you manufacture in Ireland, you can tweak a product that's on the shelf. You can have it in a few weeks. You can order 3,000 units of it. Fine.
I gotcha.
When you're doing things from scratch, your order quantities are so high because it's like bespoke for you, you know? And so that's what I've always been up against with trying to launch all of them at once. But they all just came from my brain and I guess experience in the industry.
Yeah. Knowing, that's the key thing.
Knowing your customer, knowing what isn't really there, where there's a gap and maybe how, or a product that's there but just has a fault or a flaw that you could improve.
That's interesting, having deep, deep knowledge of something that is almost natural.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, it's obvious.
Yeah.
To a million people, it's not.
Totally. And there's trends. Like, look, I get influenced by what's coming down the line. I mean, seeing the legislation, seeing that clause, maybe go, well, we need to come up with something for wet wipes. It's 2025.
Yeah.
I'm going to be ahead of it. That's how I felt. Wasn't going to be caught out again.
Hard though, because I mean, we've all been there, but you're like, oh, I need to do it, but oh, it's hard.
I know.
Like, how do I jump from something that's going really well, yeah, I mean, you could have probably milked that till 2025.
Probably.
You know, but how did you, you just knew, you're just like, this is, we're doing it, that's it.
I just knew because consumer perception, it, the customer is everything. Whatever kind of customer, whether it's your buyer in the shop, whether it's the actual end user, they determine everything. They control every fact that you get, every marketing statistic. It ends up with them. They are the people who purchase it and know what's important to them. And from my perspective, that was what was important for them. And I didn't even know how big it would get, Greta Thunberg. I had no idea where the environmental focus would go, but I'm so glad I made that decision at the time because look where it is now.
It's incredible. You get left behind. Quickly things change now.
Totally. I mean, things with the beauty industry changes so fast. Trends come and go. What's important to people now, like even if I think of my product, Barefaced, and some of the other products we have, they're all dry. And I've noticed a big trend in the industry is not wasting natural resources in manufacturing. Okay. So not including a natural resource like water in your product because you're wasting it. And, you know, customers even care about that. They want the circular economy. They want it to come around.
Right back the whole way. Yeah, exactly. Where did this come from? Yeah. Scan it and see exactly where it came from. Yeah.
And people just want to know. And the younger generation are even more so. Mm. And so
yes,
if I have a chance of sustaining the brand long-term, I've got to be focused on what's important to them.
Okay, you brought us around so well to start The Apprentice again.
Yes, and then The Apprentice.
So the third product.
This dry shampoo sheet.
This time last year, yeah. So January, Feb, this time last year. So you just launched that.
Yes.
And then you were like, okay, see ya.
Yeah, so then I launched the fourth product just as I went into film.
Okay.
Just like that. Again, a dry product, a powder cleanser, you activate with water. So waterless, same kind of MO, like same questions I asked myself. So that launched and I was gone. You know, I said yes to filming. I flew over. Left my phone at home. I had a burner phone with me so I could talk to my mom before I went in. And then, yeah, phone into a little Ziploc bag, got into a car, drove to a car park. It's so funny when I think about it. And all these Addison Lee, you know, those cars, blacked out windows. We're all sitting beside each other. None of us can see each other. There's a girl from production in my car. She's like, you can't ask me anything because I can't tell you. And I was like, fine. Then our cars get called one by one, go in. So this is like, I had no idea what was happening. I'm in my boardroom outfit. Ready.
This is day one.
This is day one. So hour one from when I left my hotel.
So, yeah, I was going to ask you. So you, this is the stuff I find really into.
Yeah, because it's TV.
You're like, what?
I know.
So like, you flew over, checked you into a hotel.
Yeah.
Okay, Pamela, go to whatever.
We'll pick you up this time tomorrow morning. Have your phone ready to hand over. Be packed.
So you had everything with you?
Everything with me. Like two massive suitcases and handed my phone over. Got into the car, obviously we're all lined up then in this car park, about 20 minutes from the hotel.
So you're going to get hit.
I know, I mean, it could have been anywhere. Yeah, it felt like
so
that.
So just drove me to a car park. Mm-hmm. Okay, Pamela, you're in taxi two.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there.
Yeah, and
for
then
how long,
the runner gets called. We were there for an hour. So I was chatting to her like, so
and
I
nice
can't
of the
ask
weekend.
You anything. Like, she's like, yeah, I can't tell you. And it's really funny. So then we go.
Having an awkward hour.
Yeah, we drive up to a studio. So I can tell it's a studio because I just know by the big door and right. everything. So I get out and I go into this like black cloaked cube, basically, with a chair in it. And everyone's whispering and I can hear someone talking beside me. And then hair and makeup come in and they just like touch you up and they're like, good luck. Then they open my curtain. Here's your suitcase, family. You know, the one you walk into the boardroom with or the waiting room. And they're like, okay, we'll count you down. So I walked in, there were already, I think, nine people maybe, standing, you know, like sitting on the couches,
so
standing.
Actually that
is the first time I saw any of these people. Well, actually, I knew two of them from auditions, but I didn't know who they were. Right. I just recognized their faces. So you go in, put your case up, and then you stand, and then more people arrive. And then you're sort of just like, none of us have spoken yet. We're all kind of eyeing each other up.
Go in there, don't say a word.
Don't say anything. You're all eyeing each other up.
So unnatural as well.
It's so bizarre. And then the phone rings, Lord Sugar, we'll see you now. And we all go in. And
this is blowing my mind. This is actually all.
I swear that's exactly how it happened. And then he tells us we're going to South Africa. And we literally go to South Africa from the boardroom.
What?
Yeah. We go there and then. Our flight was that night. So, such a
your head not melted. We're totally. Not going, what are we doing?
Yeah. And I'm meeting all these people, like 15 people for the first time. And we're all getting on a plane. It's like, it is mad when I think back to it now. I had no idea what to expect.
That is mad.
Mm.
Off you go to South Africa.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. We went straight to the airport. Well, actually, we did that walk over the bridge thing as a group. And then we went to the airport.
That's bonkers.
I know. It's TV. It's so funny.
And then South Africa for a couple of days or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Did the task. back over.
Straight from the plane to the boardroom.
My God.
Straight. And so one of the guys, the guy, Shaheen, that got fired, he never saw the house because we hadn't gone to the apprentice house yet. Yeah.
That's cold.
I know. Never got to see it.
That's hardcore.
Yeah.
That's very businesslike.
It is.
You assume it's kind of fluffy. You assume it's kind of like, oh, they're in the house and having the crack.
No, like, it's so intense. And I thought, oh my God, we've no TV. Like, I can only bring fiction books with me. It's going to be really boring. But there's no time for boredom. Genuinely no time. You're like on adrenaline. Think about what you're wearing the next day. Like, it's like a mad, mad experience.
And how much guidance are you given? So, okay, you started the boardroom. So you're going to the house now.
Yeah.
Brought to the house. We all see you going in. But, oh, it's amazing. And there's 10 rooms and blah, blah, blah. They're there for the night. They say, okay, Pamela, see you in the morning.
Well, it's very much a case of you don't really get told anything until the final hour. So like, okay, lights out at 9:30 and then it's like 9:00. Okay, everyone, we'll sit around. So tomorrow we can't tell you what time, but it's an early one. So be ready because the phone rings and it does genuinely ring. Like you don't know what time it's going to ring. So like, you're just like, what? Like, wait, what? How early? Early. Okay. Go to bed.
It's fine early. Like 9:30 is late enough. I'm a child. I go to bed really early.
Yeah,
like 9:30 is late-ish.
The phone rang. 5. That day was the ice lolly task. The phone rang at 4. 4.
Could you imagine London is so chaotic? You kind of have to be up.
Yeah, you do. To get, it's, oh, we spent hours in the car. Like one scene would be at the south, you know, south of London, the other one would be west, north, whatever. Like, it would be a nightmare because you can't get the tube, you know. Like, I'm like, we don't just get the tube, and they're like, no, you have to get in the cars. Yeah,
and you get in the cars, I think you're just like looking out the window, talking. Well,
they film you talking, so you're allowed to talk about the potential task when the camera's on you, but as soon as the camera's off you, they call it no task talking.
Okay.
So a runner will get in the car to monitor you and make sure you aren't talking. Because you can't strategize. Okay. Unless you're on camera, you can say whatever you want.
Right.
But it's not Big Brother.
So it is all on the fly, like.
Yeah, they really want it to be the first time you've heard it, the first time you've spoken about it on camera. They don't repeat things.
That's interesting, because you do kind of think, I've probably got them to do that 10 times.
No, I mean, we walk in and out of places 10 times because someone always gets it wrong, or the door won't open.
The outdoor or the indoor, it's all on first dates. Yeah.
It's just typical. So anytime we walked in and out, that took like an hour.
Really?
Yeah, even in and out of the house, like.
So it's just relentless, back to the house.
Yeah.
Bit of dinner or whatever.
Wash your clothes sometimes, like.
Really?
Yeah. Or whoever, if you won, you probably got back to the house quicker than the group that lost, because they go to the loser's calf and then all that happens.
That's all done in real time.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So the boredom days are, if you've lost, they're really long.
Pressure be high.
Huge, like, pressure.
You know, you've only X amount of energy in a day.
Mm.
Like, you would get tired and emotional.
Very.
Like,
you're on edge, like, and you don't know what people. So basically, you're not really allowed to speak to each other when you're waiting to go into the boardroom. So when you're sitting up in like the green room type area, they all want you in silence. Because again, if you're really nice, someone's really nice to you, and you go in and you've got to throw them under the bus, it's difficult. So they like it to just be, I get the process.
That's clever, yeah.
But you may not have spoken for 4 hours, and then the next time you speak is when Lord Sugar's talking to you.
And you're like, for a second.
Yeah, that's real. Like,
that's mad.
So it does build a lot of tension.
Okay.
Because you don't know who's going to say what about you. Like, you're sitting there like, have I won? Have I lost? Oh, I've lost. Which one of you is going to blame me? Like, that's how you feel.
It's well done, isn't it?
Mm.
That's smart.
Yeah, very.
Because I'd imagine, like, sitting with your thoughts for hours.
I know.
It must mess your head.
And looking around the room like, who hates
who's
me?
Who's going to shout me here?
Yeah.
Okay. And was there ever a time you were kind of looking around going, yeah, they're going to do me here?
No, actually. I mean, there were times where I think I thought, I didn't really ever feel like it was totally my fault, except perfume, which was obviously, I was massively to blame. But the other task that we lost, like the scavenger hunt, was difficult because, like, that was a hard one. Like, we'd split the items wrong at the beginning of the day, so we were destined to lose. We'd given people the items to go to Cambridge to find that were exclusively available in Oxford, you know, like, but no one person made that decision, so that was hard. But then I think when Ryan Mark was bringing me back in for the train task, when he said that I should have known about the allergy, like, it wasn't I wasn't on that side of the team. So, like, that was really unfair. I was totally blindsided by him doing that. I was like, what? is not my fault.
Yeah.
But yeah, you just have to roll with it.
And so you react obviously in the moment.
Yeah, totally. You don't know. Like, I think if we'd lost Roller Coaster, I'd have been like, look, you're just going to have to fire me. I did nothing in this task. Like, I know, like, I've never been on a roller coaster. I hate them. So if we lose, it's my fault. That's how I really felt. So that was the moment where I thought, look, if it's my fault, so okay. I'll just admit it.
Okay.
But we didn't lose.
And does anyone just like completely fly off the handle? Like completely irrationally lose it?
I've never been in the boardroom when somebody has done that. I know Lewis did it in task one. And when I watched it back, I was like, whoa, Lewis, like, yeah. What happened to you?
Because it was surprising. It didn't seem like that kind of
thing. No, I mean, it's not really that, like, but obviously the tension and everything. And no, but I don't think anyone, in my opinion, I think when people have lost it, it's genuine frustration. Mm. And I can totally relate to most of the times people lost it.
What was the hardest part? What was the, obviously been away for that length of time. Yeah. This is bonkers. Like, I actually can believe the details you told me about it, going, you're away and you can't talk about it and no rules. And
yeah, 8 weeks. I think that was definitely hard, but equally it's like the perfect environment to focus. So not having any distractions. You can see why some really big entrepreneurs are completely solo, don't have much family. They're loners in a way because you can actually get so much done when you don't have a life. You know what I mean?
Be a borderline sociopath. Borderline. Yeah. Talk about sociopath. You have to be a borderline. Something, the wires are touching a little bit funny.
Totally. And I think obviously having friends and family are extremely supportive and nurturing and probably get you where you are by being there for you. But equally, if you have no one to worry about, the efficiency of your life. Now, I know obviously production had set all these tasks up for us, so a lot of the back work and legwork was done. But when you could just go in there, you'd no phone, everything was done in the moment. You could pitch, make a product. Tomorrow it's on your shelf in the house. You pitch to the buyer the next day and the order goes in. You know, like obviously life isn't like that, but it did make me feel extremely efficient.
Okay.
Then when you come out and no one replies to your email or you don't get a meeting or, you know, and product can't be there the next day, you feel like, oh my God, I'm so used to this fast pace.
But you had a good background in product design and sourcing. And so probably your background is really suitable to go on The Apprentice.
Some tasks it was. Yeah. I think I'm grand at sales, so that was always fine. But like there were tasks where I felt like I just had no way of showing my skill. We went to Finland and filmed an advert. Mm. Like that was really hard for me. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here.
Yeah. It was a strange task.
Yeah. It was a funny task, like rebrand Finland. Like I'd never been to Finland.
Whole country, no problem.
We went there and we were like, okay, they have 70% forestry. So let's go to a forest. And then our critique was, this could be in any forest. And we were like, yeah, but like, you know, Finland is mostly forest.
I didn't know that. There you go.
There you go. So yeah, I found it completely useless at that task. Couldn't. And the music task was really hard.
Mm.
Create a song and edit.
So you're kind of back to back to back to back to back.
Yeah. Two tasks filmed back to back.
How did you sustain the pace?
I don't know.
Just listen to you describe it now. I'm like, you know, I'm kind of wrecked against the weekend. I'm like, oh.
I know.
Gonna chill out a bit now, go to the gym, you know, a bit of a...
I've never been so stressed in my entire life. Like the best time, and we all said it, was the morning of the task announcement. Because you had no idea what the task was. You couldn't panic about losing it or being crap at it or the choices you've made already. You were like in a weird bliss moment of
blank slate.
Yet.
Whatever we do here for, it'll be
and
good.
And on those briefing days, we'd have to walk in and out so many times. Lord Sugar would have to walk in and out so many times, just get different cutaways, and he would repeat his brief to us a few times. So they were the moments which were just so relaxed.
You're in it, yeah. You're probably able to. Were you able to enjoy it?
I did enjoy it, and they were the times where you could. You had a bit of a laugh, and then you get handed the dossier to read in silence, which was a bit more in depth about the task off camera, and you'd read that and go, "Oh, good God, what am I going to do? I have no ideas. Like this is going to be terrible." And then the panic would just kick in, and then you'd have 2 full days of sheer stress, and then you'd have the boardroom, and then it would start all over again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was the craziest thing I've ever done.
What did you take away from it? Have you changed from it?
I think there were 2 things that I took away. As a solo entrepreneur, and you probably can relate to this, you get so used to doing everything yourself. Mm. And probably in the back of your mind, knowing not everything you do, you're good at, but you do it because you can trust yourself.
Yeah.
It was really interesting to be put together. Most of the people were extremely competent. Like, obviously, some of them were annoying. But at the end of the day, could get on with the task, most of them. Mm. And it was really nice to be able to count on other people for things at times and have that group win and group blame at the same time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you win together, you lose together, but we're in it. Yeah.
And there was one thing Lord Sugar picked up on, and he said it to me time and time again in the boardroom, that I was quite indecisive. And I think I would have probably considered it being a perfectionist, but then in the end, I probably take too long making decisions. So when I got out of filming, and I knew the critique in my final interview episode was, you only have two products, so for that reason, I'm not going to invest in you. Mm. I'm going to have a third product, and it's not going to take me a year.
That's cool.
I'm going to have it out by the day that I am fired. It will be on shelf. And that is how I felt. We weren't on shelf, but we were online. So that's as good as on shelf.
I love that.
And that was something I thought, well, I'm going to like not be indecisive. Mm. I'm just going to sign off on it, you know, and that's kind of.
But I think anyone listening to this, listen to your whole story, I don't think that would ever have come across.
Oh no, I was so indecisive about things. I'll decide on Monday. And sure, before you know, between Friday and Monday, you've lost so many days, especially when dealing with China, who work 24/7, you know, like thinking about things, losing a week thinking about it. Mm. You know, like there were a lot of times where I lost a lot of time by thinking, do I want like this? Like, too much time.
It's a fine line too, isn't it? Because you know your survival could hinge on one decision.
Totally. But it shouldn't. Like, you know, you have a brand now, you should be able to launch a product.
You have three products as well.
Exactly.
Just to sidetrack slightly, did you go to China or Korea to look at?
I went to Korea, yeah. I enjoyed that. Like, I didn't like Korea, but I liked what I saw, got some great ideas, componentry. They do amazing packaging.
Okay.
The way they package things and their innovation in how they present formulas is really interesting. So yeah, I took away lots of ideas from Korea.
So you went over to the country because you knew that that was kind of the leader in the space? Or K-Beauty, what brought you over
there? Okay. K-Beauty is a massive trend. It's now moved on to J-Beauty, Japanese beauty.
Oh, okay.
But you can definitely see the way they've got their high streets are so beauty focused. And
really?
Penny's buyers, Primark buyers, everybody's going to Korea at that stage to look at trends.
And now it's moved on already.
It's moved on to J-Beauty. And who knows what'll be next? I don't know. I'll keep watching.
And you've never gone out to visit your suppliers yet to see?
I meet them halfway in Bologna. So Cosmoprof is the biggest international cosmetics trade show. So if there's anybody listening who wants, this is the first thing I'll tell anybody. Even just to get ideas, look for manufacturers, packaging people, componentry, all of that. Cosmoprof is the biggest one in the world. So it's a good halfway point for Asia and America. So everybody goes there. So the biggest manufacturers, the biggest packaging people will all be there.
Where is that?
In Bologna in Italy.
Bologna in Italy. Okay.
So there's, honestly, it's you can't not but be inspired in the beauty space if you go there, and you can get great contacts. So my suppliers, we meet there. So it's great.
That's good advice. It's really good advice. I like to get some kind of practical. They're generally practical episodes.
That's where you start, because if you don't know where to find a manufacturer, if you can't find one there,
give it up.
Yeah, basically.
So what's life like now that you came out?
Life is different. Like, I feel it finished just before Christmas, the episodes, and I miss the buzz of it. Mm. But there's no doubt that the impact of my business has been huge. Like, the day I got fired, that episode, I was live on my website and there were 70,000 people on at one stage.
Wow.
So I could really see the effect it had.
Okay.
But this year is looking really strong, looking at investors. I was saying to you, I was just perfecting my pitch deck before this and just getting that over the line so I can scale.
Okay.
So many opportunities that are just slightly out of reach for me with the budget I have to work with. Mm. But we're launching into Boots UK.
That's huge.
At the end of March. And New Look stores, we're at their little till point, you know, their little impulse area.
They're big.
Yeah. And Primark were just contacting me this week. An order was meant to go through into the UK last year. It just didn't happen. A mistake with my warehouse. So we'll be launching to Primark UK as well.
How do you manage everything?
I have no idea.
I always like to get like some productivity, steal some of your productivity knowledge. How do you, I'll ask a better question. How do you plan out like your month, quarter, week?
Like, I really go with the flow, to be perfectly honest. I don't recommend it. Like, it makes me feel really unstable. Mm. And again, it goes back to when everything was great. Now, things probably sound great to a lot of people. They're amazing stories. Everything is good. Like, it's all good problems I'm having. But if I go back to when I was plateauing and all the products were selling really well and I had room to breathe, I had time to go on holiday, they were the times to hire the team. That was the time to raise more funds, prepare. Everything was too good. I was naive and I thought that that could sustain. But obviously I didn't foresee the EU ban. Like, no one could have foreseen that, really. But you have to be prepared and you have to get all of the help while you're winning, because everybody wants to help you when you're winning.
Yeah. And well, look at you now. I guess now is the time to leverage this.
Exactly.
Well.
And now I am, and it's back to great again. But I think if I had done only just a couple more small things to help myself,
okay,
I could have had new products faster, and maybe there wouldn't have been such a crash when I had to get rid of it. Maybe I would have launched two more if I had a bigger team.
Okay.
That kind of thing. Right. More money. I could have just scaled a bit faster. I thought the organic growth that I was doing would have been enough. And I think it's just remember that things are going great now, but get that team in, get the help, and get the funding. Get everything you can when it's good, because you'll need it.
That's, I think that's such good advice, because when things are good, you just don't know what to do with yourself. You're just like,
oh, and you attract the talent. People want to work for you, you know?
Yeah, it's, oh, look at that. Look at Pamela flying along. And we all think, oh, it's going to be like this forever.
Yeah.
I'm a genius.
Yeah.
I've cracked the code.
You could just sit with this product forever. It'll just keep selling.
It's easy.
I invented the Post-it.
So you look to like grow a team, launch in the UK.
Definitely. Just have that support, because, you know, I'm not naive to know that the market in the UK requires support. It's great to get the listing, but it's the sell through. In fact, people say, oh, the hard part's done. The hard part has not even begun.
Okay.
The listing might be hard for some people, but actually it's so much harder to get off shelf.
How are you, if you can share any of that, how do you approach that?
I think it's definitely a new approach compared to before. You can't rely on press drops. You can't just drop it out to social influencers and expect free content. It just doesn't work that way. I think aligning yourself with influencers that give you content that's shareable. So if you're going to pay someone to post about your products, at least make a content that's shareable, whether it's in your presentations, whether it's as ads on social media, they can film a video for you. If you get more than just their word about how good the product is, if you can get great content, then you double up. You know, you're not hiring a videographer to film it. You've got the doubling up of that. And I think that's my strategy, is to try and focus on people who produce great content, also an influencer, you know, and I can use it again and it becomes more valuable. I can put it on my website. And so from there, that's probably my strategy. And I think it definitely worked for us in the UK when we launched before.
The influencer market is still strong?
I think it is. I think you just be mad to ignore it, especially as a beauty brand. It's not to say it's the only channel. I think you have to do a lot more. You've got to be on every area. You've got to be in the print magazines. You've got to be with the influencers. You've got to be in a gifting bag with London Fashion Week. You've got to do all of that. And from my perspective as a beauty brand, my cheapest marketing tool is my product. If I can gift it, get it into people's hands, that's huge for me.
That's the best of anything. That's the best marketing you can ever do.
Totally.
I think just to remind people that are listening, it's just you.
It's just me. Just me. I say
anyone that's listening to that, so we're an hour and 15 in. Okay. Anyone that's listening to that.
Yeah.
It's just Pamela. I was shocked to hear that as well. Like,
I think a lot of people are.
Which is great. That's a great compliment to you.
It is. Like, I wish there was a royal we, but there isn't. I think I'm finding it hard to identify the talent without the investor. I think I've got to get the backing before I can attract the people I would want. And it's not from a lack of wanting somebody. It's like the right people. And it's about scaling now. You know, it's it's getting commercial people in to let me focus on what I'm good at, the innovation, the front of the brand. At the moment, like, I'm filling in new line forms. Anyone who's done that, you know, hats off to you. And
I was watching your, I think we talked this earlier, I was watching your stories. It was the weekend?
Yeah.
I was like, oh God.
I know.
Poor Pamela.
Yeah, here I am, like, measuring a pallet in boxes. And like, I shouldn't be doing that. But that is the reality of where I am. And so it can't scale the way it is. It sounds great, it's just me and oh wow, but like, actually it's in a way a bad thing. Like, it's not scalable. So,
but at least you're self-aware now, you know.
Totally. I've had the experience. Like, I would recommend, if anyone can have a co-founder early days, that is something that I feel that I'm lacking from the early days, like a co-founder who is good at the areas you're not, because you probably think you're good at a lot, but actually you're not really doing anything to its fullest.
You're adequate at a lot. I think I'm describing as adequate.
Yeah.
I can cover a lot, but you're only human. Like, you're only good at a couple of things.
Yeah.
I think I've answered this question already by asking the last one. How do you do switch off?
I don't know if I've ever switched off, and it probably comes from both my parents were entrepreneurs. So work never really ended. Like, work was always there, you know? And I think,
but the term work, probably you wouldn't describe it as that all the time, would you?
No, like, it's just my life now. And I think going on to emails, it doesn't feel like that like, honestly, being off is sometimes more hectic, because when you go back to being on, catching up on yourself is like, I'd rather just chip away at everything nicely. But if I do want to switch off, like if I want to like distract myself from a crap day, like it'd be Netflix, or sadly online shopping is very therapeutic for me. Just add to basket.
It's just research. It's, you know, just research.
That's all. I love going on holidays, but I haven't had the luxury of going in a while.
Okay.
Again, just because it's just not, it would cost me a lot of stress, and I can't find the time that I can go.
Okay.
Which is difficult because I do love a good sun holiday. But I would advise, if anyone's in a good place and can take time, like a different time zone is great, because there are areas of that day where nobody in your market is awake. And that is a good time because nobody's emailing you.
Yeah.
You know, you actually have a few hours of your own day that won't exist in somebody else's working day.
Two years ago, we went on a cruise, and that was the first time I'd ever been switched off from the business. And it was magic.
Yeah.
Because I caught me on as well. Mm-hmm. It caught me on because I couldn't. There was no reception. I knew there was going to be no reception. I wasn't paying like whatever it was, 40 quid a day for Wi-Fi, mm-hmm. intentionally, because I didn't want to be online.
There you go.
And it was magic.
Yeah.
It forced me to put all the systems in place before I went.
Mm-hmm. Which it does.
And it can be done. We have this kind of martyr complex at times as well. And now I had a great team working with me at the time, so, and they're still with me now. So I was kind of lucky. Mm-hmm. Not lucky, but you know, I was able to give them the systems that they were like, oh, no problem. And it was me was actually the roadblock.
Yeah.
I was the one going, oh, okay, this,
can
this.
Can I check in on that? Yeah.
Getting involved and everything. Like, it's mad. But you kind of have to, you nearly need a massive event or something that forces you out the door going, okay,
100%.
You're offline. But like, I think your apprentice
I was gone for 2 months.
Taught you probably so much.
So much. And people are like, oh, you're back, you're going to go on holiday. And I was like, no, I've just been away for 2 months. I cannot go anywhere. But no, it taught me a lot. And it's, yeah, if anyone's thinking of going for it, you absolutely should. And I think I touched on imposter syndrome before in a presentation recently, and people sort of critiqued me a little bit saying, well, you went on TV, how can you feel like an imposter? But now I'm in this pitching for investment from investors in a real business and financial space is where I feel like an imposter. Being on The Apprentice and just showcasing my skills and eventually getting the opportunity to talk about my brand is where I feel really comfortable. In this space where I'm condensing my business plan to 10 slides, I'm not allowed to talk about the fluffy stuff. Not, I'm not allowed. They don't care about that. Yeah. That is the space that's hard. So if anyone's thinking of going for The Apprentice and you're not happy in a traditional investment format, it's an amazing opportunity. Mm. Like, I couldn't recommend it more.
Like, it is hard. I mean, you know, going from investors to be succinct as possible.
And
it's a very different, I think all, any entrepreneur I know suffers from that, like not a lack of confidence, but it's an imposter syndrome. You've nailed it. I remember you were posting about your talk, and I was like, God, that's exactly what it is. Because sometimes you're like, I don't have a fucking clue what I'm doing.
Yeah, like, it's really obvious. Everyone knows.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
But the more I meet people, even at really super high level, you're going, you're not a super genius.
No.
You know,
most people aren't.
But you project, there's a few. We talked about a couple of people earlier. There's a couple of people you meet, you're like, you are just whatever it is, you have it.
Yeah.
But the majority of us, I would count myself in that, where you're like, they're just pluggers. They'll get there, they're action takers. But it's great when you meet people like super high level you respect, going, oh, actually, there's no secret sauce.
I know. They're just good, and they're good at putting people in the right place. And that's what The Apprentice teaches you. Like, okay, you have to divide this team. Where are you going to put these people? And you're like, oh, God. But you learn, you know, to see people's skill sets, and you have to be able to hand it over and know. Like, for instance, Karina, who won, she, when we came out of The Apprentice, I didn't know she'd won at the time, but she was like, God, you know you have a good business when you leave and the turnover is higher than when you were there. That's how good her team is.
Oh, yes.
So Karina comes from a background of managing people at Marks and Spencers, and she is so good at picking people. And that's why she was so good as PM across all the tasks. And that's why she won, because that is a
talent spot.
Exactly. And I think that's how you know. So when my business can do that, I will go on the cruise, I'll go on holiday, knowing, you know, that that's going to happen when I'm gone. And that's where I think you know you've made it in business.
I think that's the hard part. I think any really big entrepreneur you talk to who run bigger businesses with hundreds of people going, that's the hardest part.
It's hard to nail.
Always
sure.
The people.
Mm-hmm.
Always. Okay, I'm going to let you go because you're an hour and 20 in.
Do you have a book? Stay this long.
Do you have a book you'd recommend?
Do you know, it's terrible that I don't really read books. I thought about this question as I listened to all your podcasts. There have been books that I've audio listened to in the car. And I think you can read them as well.
Okay.
But then I have another book. Like when I was filming The Apprentice, I read all the John Grisham books.
Yes.
And I think there's nothing more refreshing as an entrepreneur to read something that has nothing to do with anything, because it's a moment where you're thinking about.
Yeah.
And actually, it makes you slightly more creative. Because you're obviously talking about serial killers or whatever John Grisham might be writing about at the time, but you're reading and you're just thinking, this is a moment away from what I do all day, every day. Like sometimes inspiring books can make you feel a bit less of a success, I find.
I only read business books in the morning.
There you go.
I read fiction.
At night. At night. Okay, well, there you go.
Rubbish. But I read thrillers, mysteries.
Yes.
Whatever.
Switch
just
off.
Story. Yeah. I just get lost in the story because I get into bed, I'm like, right, 20, 30 minutes, whatever it is. Mm. And you're just gone.
Yeah.
And I always have since I was tiny. I'd always read books every night and you're gone.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I have that problem as you do. Just thinking.
Oh, should I have done that? Thinking. Should I do this now? And yeah, I think it's too.
It just stresses me out. Like.
But if I was listening to an audiobook in the car during the day, because not at night, but I would probably say The Intelligent Entrepreneur. I was recommended it by a female entrepreneur group. And even just the business lingo discussion that kind of, you know, was happening on the audiobook that I was listening to. I was like, oh, this is just really strategies or just even processes that were discussed fascinated me. And there were things that I just never really think of because it's very businessy. Like I think if I read it, I'd fall asleep.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Audible is brilliant.
It's great. Because
it'll kind of make me listen to books or necessarily mind of the couldn't desire read. To sit down.
And sometimes I have to rewind and go, wait, what?
Yeah.
What do you think?
It's not just me. Okay.
Yeah. No. So yeah, they would probably be the two things.
The
but
intelligent
yeah.
entrepreneur.
Intelligent entrepreneur.
Okay. Perfect.
We'll now it's not going to like, you know.
But someone mentioned it last year to me and something I'd never actually thought about is the right book at the right time.
Exactly. Because sometimes you can read things and it really makes, like sometimes I've listened to podcasts and gone, oh, well, isn't it just well for them at that time? Like, aren't you great switching this off?
That's why I can't listen to a lot of the American ones.
The American ones are so positive. I can't cope with it.
Just navel, like, or like, oh yeah, you know, we scaled to like a billion in you know, 18 months. And I'm like, ugh.
I know.
You just, yeah.
Even Lord Sugar's story sometimes makes me feel like he's incredible, but at the same time, like you can't follow what he did and have the same result because it was a
different
lot of
time.
Timing,
different
you know,
time.
Like, so there are some stories that are amazing to listen to, but absolutely unapplicable to you in your business.
I think that's a talent too, being able to look at a story and go, great story.
Yeah.
I don't need to follow it. Yeah. I think as you get a bit older as well, you kind of go, I don't have to follow that story.
No.
I used to always look for the template.
Yeah.
What's the template? Who can I just follow?
Yeah, it doesn't exist.
It exists. It is. You are who you are.
Yeah, you
the
are.
The magic of Moxie Doves is you.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. And, you know, you could give that business to someone else and it'd probably fall flat on its face.
Yeah, it just is the way you do it. And I think that's so people looking for inspiration sometimes spend too much time looking and not enough time doing.
Oh, guilty. 100% guilty. Mm. Hands up on that. Definitely guilty. Podcasts, you know, blog posts, you know, everything. Just,
yeah.
But it's just taking bits. I try to take one thing.
One thing, exactly.
I listen to a podcast, try to take one thing, read a whole book. I try to take one thing. Because I used to be like stressing myself out.
Yeah.
I'd read a book, put it down, go, right, summarize that in your head now.
I know, like, you've what? Your VidHit podcast really stuck me because in my mind that was just developed 4 years ago. It was just an innovative of the moment. And then when you listen to that story, I was like, wow. Not every business is overnight. Like,
really. That really hit me because I didn't know that. I try not to know too much about people.
Yeah.
Like I said to you, I didn't look into certain things too much about it because I just want to have a chat with you. Mm. I want to have that discovery and kind of go, oh, wow, really? Mm-hmm. Like all the stuff we talked about. And I think that blew me away.
That honestly, I was shocked.
That like just determination. But when you think about it logically, you're going, such a tough area to get into, especially when it was like healthy drinks.
He made me want to get in my car with a box of Moxie and drive around the country selling it. Genuinely.
Yeah.
That's how I felt. I was like, that's it. I'm selling it myself.
I'm doing it.
I'm out here.
But isn't it amazing though? Even the guys at the highest level, they're going to ship 25 million units last year, I think. You know, at that level. But it all starts from what you've done in terms of like, you know, your idea, you get it developed and then you chip.
Yeah, you have time. Like,
it's like we said, it's never one thing.
No.
It's never one blog post. It's never one. Oh, it'll just go viral.
Yeah.
It's never one thing. Pamela, thank you so much.
Thank you.
To win the book, they just have to tag you on social media. So where can people learn more about Moxie Loves?
You can follow us on Moxie Loves at Moxie Loves on social media, moxieloves.com. I'm Pamela_Laird if you want some more boring business daily niggles that I share.
It's good. I like your account. You kind of have that perfect mix of like real world entrepreneur. Mm. You follow some people and you're like, ugh. It's not like that.
No, it's not. We know.
So yeah, highly recommend that. So to win the book, just follow Moxie Loves, share it on social media. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed that chat as much as I did. I'm glad I split it over 2 weeks, as I think there was so much value and so much good stuff in Pamela's interview that it was well worth over 2 episodes. So let me know if the new episode lengths are good, if you like them. If you don't like them, any feedback at all is always welcome. If you do get a minute this week, will you do me a favor and leave a review on iTunes, as I'm trying to get the podcast as high up the charts as possible. So that would be great. If you do, just go to iTunes and leave a review. That would be super. If you want to win a copy of the book that Pamela talked about, The Intelligent Entrepreneur, just share this episode, but make sure to tag myself, Pamela, and Moxie Loves, being a chance to win. And I will see you next Thursday at 6 a.m. Thank you so much for listening.